for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded? Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Happy Friday to you. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from coast to coast on the Sirius satellite radio system, on CRN Digital, on cable systems in 29 states, and a few radio stations there too, and beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live 365's American FM, and on it goes. It is the first hour of our Friday program, time for our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, the only independent member of the House of Representatives. He became the first independent elected in 40 years in 1991, since been reelected seven times, longest serving independent in the history of the House of Representatives. His website, bernie.house.gov. If you have questions or comments or thoughts for Congressman Sanders, or you know, just to toss into the dialogue here, our telephone number 1-866, toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894 nationwide. And if you want to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com will get you there, however you spell it, and just click on live chat. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
It's great to have you here, Bernie. Hey, we've got an interesting story about the media here. Alternet just published this thing. Rory O'Connor, in fact, they just published it today, I guess. The David Kelly, who's the Emmy Award-winning creator of Picket Fences, Doogie Howser, Ally McBeal, Boston Public, The Practice. This Boston Legal is a TV show. It's going to be broadcast this Sunday, this weekend. And the original script, they've got the original script here. And in the original script, one of the characters is talking about putting this thing called a Fox blocker, which you can buy on the web. It's a thing you put on your cable system, and it prevents your TV from seeing Fox News. And people are actually selling these things. I mean, this is a real thing, right? And so it's like a plot device, right? They're yeah, putting it into this high school. And so ABC apparently got into the act and censored that out of the script. So now it's a news blocker. And then according to Robert Greenwald, who created the Outfox documentary, as well as a number of others.
I know about the Outfox. Yeah. Outfox documentary. I was in it.
Okay, yeah, exactly. Okay, well, here, according to Greenwald's distributor, Gary Badley, a representative of the Broadcast Standards and Practices Department at ABC named Joel Reznikow, indicated that ABC would not accept an advertisement for this movie Outfox that you are in, Bernie, to run during this Boston Legal program tonight. And if it's okay with you, I'd like to just play this little clip of this ad that ABC will not allow you to hear on Sunday night on Boston Legal. Here it is. Of course, there's video that's associated with it as well, but here's the audio.
Well, the shut-up line has happened only once in 6 years.
Well, I know what I'm doing.
Shut up.
I'm asking you to shut up about sex.
What? Listen, cut his mic.
No,
hey,
that's
shut up.
No,
you had your 35 minutes. Shut up.
And it is our duty as loyal Americans to shut up and shut up publicly. We expect every American to support our military, and if they can't do that, to shut up. So you keep your mouth shut.
In a democracy, you don't have to shut up. Speak up.
And then the ad says www.outfoxed.whatever it is. It's either com or org, whatever, you know, for the. So, your thoughts on this, Congressman
Sanders?
Well,
it's a very good ad, but
yeah,
the ad itself raises a major concern about what's happening in this country in terms of the growing amount of censorship and fear that many people in the broadcasting industry have, and the fact that ABC, which among other things is supposed to be in competition with Fox, wouldn't play that ad just reconfirms my feeling about the fear that exists out there. And what we're looking at in Washington, friends, is a situation which is going to go from bad to worse unless we can change it. A few weeks ago in the House, with a very strong vote, pathetically strong vote, there was a vote to support legislation which would substantially raise the fine for quote-unquote indecency, up to $500,000, which is very intimidating for anybody, especially small broadcasters. We heard,
for example,
people who run Vermont Public Television, which is a reasonably small public television station, which essentially told me that if this legislation gets passed, they would be very, very nervous about presenting a range of films that might be thought to be which could be attacked for being indecent.
Yeah, including
we're seeing this whole chill, and now you have Ted Stevens in the Senate, and this is huge. Wants to take this very bad idea and expand it to cable, which means HBO, which essentially means that programs like The Sopranos would be taken off of the air or substantially changed. The whole essence of what that program is, if you like it or you don't like it, doesn't matter, but would be radically reformed. You know, programs like Sex in the City, I suspect, would fall outside of what they consider to be, or within what they consider to be, indecent. So this is a huge attack on the First Amendment, the right of the American people to see what they want to see, writers to write what they want to write, the theory that the marketplace rules, right? You may not like it, Tom. I may not like it. But if people want to watch it, they have the right as American citizens to do so. Well, I guess not. It's a very dangerous trend.
And I wonder to what extent, Bernie, in your mind, this trend of government censorship, which is the thing that historically conservatives have been worried about, might be also tracking the trend of media consolidation, which historically conservatives have sort of celebrated and liberals have been worried or progressives have been worried about. But it seems that there's some hand in glove going on here. And maybe you can enlighten us about
that.
Well,
we're looking at two parallel areas that should be of enormous concern to the American people. And number one is that fewer and fewer large multinational media conglomerates control what we see, hear, and read. And as we have discussed on this program before, the Bush administration wants to further deregulate media. Last year, we were able to stop them as a result of a lot of public uproar, as well as a court decision which repealed the FCC decision, which would have allowed for more deregulation. But we're going to have to fight that battle again. So on one hand, there are fewer and fewer large companies controlling what we see, hear, and read. And then on the other hand, you have an extremely right-wing administration which is using terrorism, or which is using, they don't like dirty words, to really crack down on what we can see on television or hear in the radio. Add those two together, and it is a significant step forward to limiting the freedom of the American people to see and hear what they want.
Well, and then there's a third one, and I'd love to get your take on this. I know that ever since, I believe it's 1961, maybe it was 51, there has always been a rider or a sentence attached to every appropriations bill that says that the money in this bill cannot be used to foist propaganda upon the American people, or something to that effect. And it was announced this week that a cable system down in Florida is now carrying Pentagon TV.
Right.
And it seems to me that Pentagon TV, which is designed to go out to our troops, but always has a very specific point of view, shall we say, might be considered propaganda, and this is now on public cable systems.
Absolutely. No.
What's going on here?
That's a very good point, Tom. And it's a new Defense Department television network is developing, which, you're right, is ostensibly for the troops, but which will get out to the public, which is now, this is government television. This is the Bush administration.
This is Pravda.
That's right. No, it's exactly what it is. And then you add that to the fact that the Bush administration, as I'm sure you have discussed, has been paying quote-unquote journalists to push their point of view in the media, giving them under-the-table sums of money. Armstrong, what's his name?
Williams, yeah. And apparently also to sit in the audience and lob softball questions, not just to the White House.
And then you have an extreme right-wing non-journalist journalist who, you know, represented a non-company or something, to be able to sit in the White House press gallery and lob softball questions. Yeah. Add all of this together, and it is an alarming situation, and it's one that the American people have got to stand up and fight against.
Now, along those same lines, the same broad area of freedom of speech, you have offered, I believe it was just this last week, if I read this news story correctly, you have offered an amendment to the Patriot Act that
right.
would roll back parts of Section 215. Talk
right.
about Section 215 and what
the issue is. There. I voted against the Patriot Act, and I think more and more Americans and more members of Congress who are becoming familiar with the bill understand that it is a very dangerous bill in its totality.
Now that they've finally had time to read it, right?
Yes, that's right. Section 215 is a particular provision which allows government agents without probable cause to go into libraries and bookstores and monitor and get information about the books that you have read and the books that you have purchased. And that is having a real chilling impact on intellectual thought. We do not want kids in this country to be nervous about taking out biographies of Osama bin Laden or whatever it may be, because they are worried that somebody is going to think that they are a terrorist and so forth. Historically, the FBI and other agencies could go into libraries, could go into bookstores, but they have to develop probable cause. They have to give an independent branch of government, the judiciary, or a grand jury, reasons why they thought somebody should be investigated. What's also problematic about this particular legislation is the librarian in question cannot tell anybody, except perhaps a lawyer, that the client is under investigation.
And so you
add all of these things together, Tom, and you find that a guy in the White House who talks about freedom, freedom, freedom is in a very significant way making us a less free nation. All of us are concerned about terrorism. All of us want to make sure that our people are protected. But I am very concerned that under the guise of terrorism or in the guise of indecency, we are becoming a less free country.
Yeah, and speaking about probable cause, let's just remind people, the Fourth Amendment to the Constitution, it's one sentence long. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrant shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. End quote.
And I should just mention, maybe to wrap up this part of the discussion, we introduced an amendment which contained the essence of what we're trying to do last summer. At the end of the regulation time, we were ahead, I believe, by 8 votes. We had won. Our amendment had won with the support of, my memory is correct, some 28 Republicans. What the Republican leadership did, what the Speaker did, is refuse to gavel down the vote. They kept it open for an extra 18 minutes while they twisted Republican arms, turned votes around, and we ended up losing 210 to 210. So they told us, we don't have to worry about democracy. Trust us.
Yeah.
We're only going after the bad guys, but they couldn't allow democracy on the floor of the House.
On the floor of the House of Representatives. That it's tragic. Our number, 1-866, toll-free nationwide, 1-866-889-8894. If you'd like to get in on this, we're talking with Congressman Bernie Sanders, independent of Vermont. It's the Brunch with Bernie segment on the Tom Hartman radio program. We shall return.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lindball.
This is the old Brush Show. Brush.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
I've got insurance. At least for now I do. And if I bought generic, it would cut my costs in two. But I want Progenitorivox, 'cause I saw it on TV. Those families look so functional, that Paisley pills for me.
But it may cause deprivation, humiliation, debtors, prison, and deportation.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, a little song there, Bernie, about the weirdnesses of health insurance and the wonders of the drug industry, the pharmaceutical industry. Anyhow, our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. And Doug in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania, on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Go. Are you there?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I wondered why I heard you talking about the Fourth Amendment before the last break. I wondered why random drug testing doesn't fit into that. illegal search. I mean, it is a search of your body. I don't believe it is anyway. But the reason I ask is last year, I drive a truck for a living, and our company does random testing. And last year, I was tested twice in the first 3 months of the year. And the third time it came up was the end of March. And I told them I wasn't going to do it anymore. I ended up having a month off of work.
Hmm. Interesting.
I guess the reasoning was it happened like on a Thursday, and I thought about it over the weekend, talked it over with my wife, and I was real upset that this was even happening to me. And then, I went in on Monday and told him, okay, I'll do it, but I don't like doing it. I'm tired of doing this, And he said, well, according to DOT regulations, if you refuse to take one, it's the same as flunking one. Yeah. And I ended up going to counseling for the next 30 days.
Yeah, Bernie, my take on that is that this is an invasion of our privacy. What are your thoughts on that?
Think that you're right on that, Doug. All of these things make people smaller and smaller. We become less human when we think, hey, somebody calls you over, hey, we're going to take some blood, take some urine or whatever. Driving with drugs is a dangerous problem. We got to deal with it, but I don't think that's the way to deal with it.
Yeah, there's no probable cause here. This is just
right.
Yeah, okay. So, Doug, we agree with you.
Yeah. Okay. So, I wish there was something they could do about it to change it, but probably nothing will ever change on that, right?
Yeah. There's a real drug hysteria, isn't there, Bernie? It's just this whole industry.
Drugs are a serious problem, but I think that telling large numbers of innocent people that they have to submit to random tests all of the time is a serious invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
Which we're seeing in many, many areas of our life.
I got to tell you, Bernie, just as an anecdote relative to this, back in the early 70s or the late 70s. I owned an herbal tea company in Michigan, and I had a friend who was selling into that same industry, and he was making kits that would test for drugs. They would basically test for drugs, and it was a marginal product at the time. I mean, it was just there was no market for it outside of concerned parents, and there are very few. But he told me that the cost of manufacturing the test was around 10 cents, and he was selling them for around $25. And he now is a multi-millionaire, lives out in Los Angeles.
You're just doing a radio show.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And the way he got that way is they started lobbying Congress, saying, we've got to make these drug tests mandatory, and by the way, you guys in Congress, you're going to pay the bill for it, and it's going to be $25 a whack, and it still costs us a nickel to make them.
Yeah.
Often
what happens is there are real problems out there. I mean, no one wants to see, people driving big rigs on drugs, and nobody wants to certainly see terrorist attacks against America. Many people don't want to see kids watching vulgarity on television. So you got a problem. And then some of these people just take the problem. They say, okay, we're going to invade. We're going to say nobody in America can watch this programming.
Right.
Everybody has got to do these random tests and so forth. And
how can we profit from this, or how can we restrict American freedom?
With it?
Yeah, it's absolutely remarkable. And Stanley's sitting out there, my old friend Stanley sitting out there in his mansion in Bel Air, just looking back, laughing, and all the trucking companies have got to buy their tests from him, and we the people are a little more scared every day. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. We will come back with your calls and Congressman Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment, 29 minutes past the hour, on the True People's Radio, the Tom Hartman Program.
LaborRadio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
You may be an ambassador to England or France. You may like to gamble. You might like to dance. You may be the heavyweight champion of the world. You may be a socialite with a long string of pearls.
And welcome back.
You have to serve somebody.
And it appears that some members of the Senate are serving, one of the folks in our chat room, Bernie, asks your position on this bankruptcy bill, are serving the credit card companies, just for the record.
No question about it. It's a very bad piece of legislation, and I'm strongly opposed to it.
Okay.
It hasn't come to the House yet, but when it does, unless there are very fundamental and radical modifications of what's in it, I certainly will vote against it. This whole issue of credit card usury and the fact that large numbers of Americans are paying 25-28% interest rates is outrageous, and I think most people in Washington understand that this bankruptcy bill is being pushed by the banks and credit card companies at the detriment of the middle class and working families.
Yeah, well said. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Tim in Illinois on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom. Hi, Congressman Sanders.
Yes.
Are you aware that we've got the highest standard of living of any country that borders Mexico?
Well, I guess you make that point. That's an indisputable point.
On behalf of millions of liberals in this country, let's make that tens of millions. Thanks for speaking out against Greenspan, the political hack, and for the American people.
Well, thank you, Tim. And I'm happy to say, you know, for a number of years, I was one of the very few people in Congress to say, Mr. Greenspan is not some erudite, brilliant economist brought in to lecture us about all the important things that we need to do. In fact, he is a right-wing hack who represents big money interests. And over the years, we have managed to ascertain from Mr. Greenspan that, among other things, not only does he believe in tax breaks for the rich, unfettered free trade, which is costing us millions of decent-paying jobs, he actually, I guess I have to give him courage for this, he said he believes in abolishing the minimum wage.
Yeah.
So that if an employer in America today can pay somebody $2 an hour, Mr. Greenspan has no problem with that. But the good news on that issue, Tim, is I think you're seeing more and more, at least Democrats in Congress, beginning to catch on that this guy is a real right-winger, and we don't have to bow down to every pearl of wisdom that comes from his mouth.
Yeah, well said, Tim. Thanks for the call, and thank you, Bernie, for pointing that out. Bill in California on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Just a quick question, and I hope I can phrase this properly. How did we get in this position where we quit listening to each other? When did this start, this attitude of, I know the fairness and broadcasting thing comes up as a concern that I have, which was got rid of. But how did we get to where we quit listening? Two different sides. Moderation went out the door. Would this start with Reagan? When did this start?
Well, that's a, you know, Bill, that's a good question. I don't know that anyone could pinpoint the date to it. I would say that certainly one of the factors in that is the extreme harshness that came with Newt Gingrich and his contract with America, where people on the other side were not people who had different points of view, but people who are the quote-unquote hate America crowd, the unpatriotic crowd, the crowd that doesn't love the troops. In other words, we're not people who disagree on what's best for America, but you know, those of us who disagree with the right wing are anti-American. And that kind, and then the growth of right wing media, and I think which predated Gingrich and the elimination of the Fairness Doctrine, and the growth of Rush Limbaugh et al. On media, who are extremely right wing, extremely vehement in their points of view, I think contributed to that kind of climate.
Yeah. And good question, Bill. And a lot of that, Bernie, came with Frank Luntz. He helped Newt write the contract on America and come up with the language for it by focus grouping all these words. He's the one who says you've got to use the word personal accounts instead of private accounts.
Right.
And
I mean, that's a kind of a different issue. But the bottom line here, I think, of what's happening in America now is you're seeing the middle class shrinking, poverty increasing, and the rich becoming much richer. There was Forbes just published their richest people in the world, and wealthiest people are becoming wealthier by leaps and bounds, while most people struggle to keep their heads above water. And what Luntz and these other people have managed to do is to phrase issues in such a way that doesn't allow us to see the real reality of what's happening in American society. And also, deflects attention from the collapse of the middle class, the increase in poverty, the disintegration of our healthcare system, our disastrous trade policies by which China will become, I think, the economic powerhouse of the world in 20 years. We don't talk about those issues.
Yeah.
We're supposed to fight with each other over gay rights and gun control and all that other stuff.
Yeah, well,
they have been very successful.
And we just had our largest trade deficit ever. I mean, China is the economic powerhouse. But let's go back to the phone calls here. We have Matt in Kansas on the line. Matt, welcome. You're live with Congressman Sanders.
Mr. Congressman, I salute you for attempting to do something about this incredible trade deficit with China. I know you have introduced some legislation. My question is, how are we doing on that? And my comment is, I want you to run for president, and I want Tom to be your running mate.
Thank you very much, Matt. We're doing pretty well on this thing. If we appreciate that you're taking on all of corporate America, if we understand that the media very much hesitates to talk about this issue. I think we're up to maybe 70, 75 co-sponsors, including 18 or 19 Republicans. The issue that Matt raises, to my mind, is perhaps the most important economic issue facing America, and that is we have now a $617 billion trade deficit. We have lost millions of good-paying jobs. Warren Buffett recently called America moving to a quote-unquote sharecropper society where people in other countries are going to own our debt, and I am very fearful that they will be calling the tunes. Not only have we lost blue-collar jobs, we're on the way to lose good-paying information technology jobs, computer jobs, white-collar jobs. If we don't get a handle on that, we're going to become a nation of hamburger flippers and not the great economy that we have been in the past.
Yeah, and we're
Bernie, I'm wearing a Carhartt shirt right now that was made in Costa Rica. What does that say?
That's right.
Yeah. Matt,
let me tell you something.
Thank you.
Matt, there are members of the United States Congress who wave those little American flags. Do you know where they're made,
yes,
Matt?
Sir. I remember you talking about that, sir. That's China.
That's right.
Incredible.
They're made in China.
Yeah,
absolutely,
Matt,
incredible. Thank you for everything you're doing, both of you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Matt.
Matt, thanks for the call. 1-866-889-8894. Alice in Humboldt County, California. Hey, Alice.
Yes. Congressman Sanders, if we are not able to get rid of these trick voting machines, then democracy in America is dead.
Well, Alice, you raise a very important issue that Tom Hartman has been one of the leaders in our country about, and I know he talks about it a lot. And we are working on legislation. A fellow named Rush Holt from New Jersey has introduced very good legislation that would mandate that there are paper trails that are produced so that people know, A, their vote is counted, and we have an ability to do a recount with paper ballots.
And that there are audits and things, that there's
exactly.
Controls in place. Alice, thank you for the call, and thanks for raising that issue. I appreciate it. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota on the line. Tom, welcome to the program.
Morning, Tom. Morning, Bernie.
Morning, Tom.
Yeah, I just wanted to quickly elaborate a little bit more on what brought us to this point where we don't listen to each other, and you hit that pretty well with the 1994 Gingrich word list, and I'm sure Tom could elaborate more on those real abrasive words that were injected into the discourse, and it basically poisoned the well of political discourse. And then Limbaugh and his ilk of about 450 radio zombies have saturated the radio with this discourse. And I've listened to Limbaugh sometimes, and he would use words like, we don't want to compromise. We want to crush the Democrats. And you hear these other guys calling us communists. That is what has poisoned the well, and we are forced to throw it back, because if you try to compromise, they'll just run right over you.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we can say, I think there's a lot of truth to what you just said, Tom. And I think the lesson to be learned is that the right wing in this country is not only well-funded, they're smart, they're well organized, and they play for keeps. I mentioned earlier, just on the floor of the House, I introduced an amendment that would repeal a section of the USA Patriot Act at the end of regulation time. I won. My amendment won with the support of a heck of a lot of people. They kept the polls open for another 20 minutes in order to defeat us. The Medicare prescription drug bill, most significant bill passed in the last couple of years, they kept the rolls open for 3 hours. 5 o'clock in the morning. So these guys play for keeps. They don't believe in losing. And I think we are going to have to learn how to be organized, have to be strong, have to be focused, because our point of view, which represents the needs of working families and the middle class, the millions of people who are struggling, is the majority point of view. And we got to bring those people together. We got to get them involved in politics. And if we do that, I think we can take back America.
Well said. Nancy in Texas on the line. Hey, Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine.
Oh, okay, great. I have a question.
Nancy, now.
On all sides. I'm a member of this Sierra Club, and I see how this administration is systematically destroying our environment. And there's the problem of the Social Security. And I realize we're being run by the lunatic fringe. I'm wondering how you prioritize, or what would your priorities be as far as the problem?
Well, all of the, obviously, if our environment is destroyed, there's not going to be much left for our country or the world. So environmental issues are enormously important. But politically, I think the goal is to see what issues are out there that bring a vast majority of people together to take on Bush. For example, if you say to the average American, should we give hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks, roll up the deficit, and then underfund the needs of our veterans and our children's education, the vast majority of the people will say, no, that's not what we should be doing. We talked about trade. You ask the vast majority of working people if they think it's a good idea that large multinational corporations are able to throw them out on the street, move to China, pay people 30 cents an hour, bring the product back into this country, and destroy our economy. Vast majority of the people disagree with the president on that issue. Civil liberties, people disagree with the president. So what we have got to do is find those issues that are out there that bring together the people to say the president represents multinational corporations and the very richest people in this country. We need a progressive agenda representing the middle class, working families. We are the majority. Let's organize and let's take back our government.
Amen. 1-866-889-8894. Vincent, New Mexico on the line. Hey, Vincent.
Hello, Bernie and Tom. It's an honor to speak with you. And I just want to, I know you're getting tired of hearing about this subject, but the voting machines, once again, I don't think anything is going to happen on a national level. Can't we tackle it state by state somehow?
Sure can, Vince. You sure can. And that's an area, you know, one of the expressions that I have always believed in is think globally and act locally. If the federal government is not going to do it for you, then you do it at your city hall, you do it at your state legislature. You sure can demand that your secretary of state, that your legislature say, we don't want touchscreen balloting, which leaves no paper trail. And
right.
Some states
and
are beginning
thing.
To do that.
I'm sorry. And one more thing. What do you make of the 18 senators that voted on the bankruptcy bill, the 18 Democrat senators? That surprises me.
Well, I mean, you know, the problem is we know that the Republican Party is an extreme right-wing party, but there are a number of Democrats who are also, unfortunately, beholden to corporate interests.
Yeah, I just, Bernie, have to share this with you. You know, the legislation, Bush's Clear Skies Initiative, which would have allowed 20 tons of mercury a year to be dumped into the atmosphere instead
of... You've got to admire the title of that bill,
yeah,
don't you?
Yeah, I know. Instead of the 5 tons a year right now that the current law provides for, was defeated. And the lead paragraph in the Burlington Free Press article, an article by Aaron Kelly, Free Press Washington writer, in a major loss for the Bush administration, a key Senate panel Wednesday defeated a bill to reduce the power plant pollution that has blown mercury and other toxic chemicals into Vermont. That's the opening paragraph. It says that it's got a picture of Jim Jeffords. It says Congress voted to shoot down a bill that would reduce mercury. And they've even got the reporters thinking upside down.
Well, it's like, you know, you come up with the title, you know, the bill to save the environment destroys the environment. The bill to protect children throws kids out on the street. I mean, they have figured that out. And unfortunately, the media very often does not do a good job in seeing through that stuff.
That's tragic. Martha in Massachusetts on the line. Hey, Martha, welcome to the program.
Hi, how are you, fellas?
Good.
Good.
I also wanted to thank Congressman Sanders. I watch C-SPAN a lot, and all I get to say is way to go, Bernie. And I went to a town hall meeting that Marty Meehan was at,
yep.
Had to do with Social Security.
Yep.
And I did ask him later, you know, if he had any support from any Republicans, and he said there's a few moderates that are getting on board, and then I asked him about you, and his face lit up like a Christmas tree and said, oh, yeah, Bernie's with us, he's with us. So I just wanted to let you know that you're well thought of in parts of the House of Representatives also. So,
well, thank you.
Keep up the good work, please.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Martha. Okay. Thanks.
Let me just
say
a word on Social Security, which obviously is one of the major issues that Congress is now dealing with. I think maybe that the American people are catching on to the lies that the president is telling us. And let me say something. I'm not comfortable about calling the president a liar. I don't like doing that because I have many conservative friends who I disagree with very strongly, who are not liars, who believe in what they believe. They deal with facts and they have an opinion, and I respect that. But when this president goes around telling the American people, and especially the younger generation, that Social Security is going bankrupt, that it's not going to be there for them, that it's in crisis, that's a lie. And that's the only word I can use for that. The reality is, study after study shows, Social Security can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for 37 years or 47 years or maybe even longer than that, depending on the study. Social Security, Mr. President, is not going bankrupt. Don't lie to the American people.
Well said. Thank you. It's our Brunch with Bernie segment. Congressman Bernie Sanders, thanks for that call, Martha. Tom Hartman here with you, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be back with more calls right after this on the True People's Radio.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that ruled...
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Now you can say that I've grown bitter, but of this you may be sure. The rich have got their channels in the bedrooms of the poor, and there's a mighty judgment coming.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894. We have several calls here. Let's try and get through them quickly. Harriet in Seattle on the line. Hey, Harriet.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Harriet.
This is just kind of a heads-up thing. Out here in the state of Washington, we have been declared a drought condition. And it's already been mentioned of making rather extensive use of National Guard troops on the fire lines. And the latest drought map for severe and critical areas takes in the upper tier of states in the Intermountain area. And going by last year when we had a lot more water, the way it burned was kind of frightening.
And so, where are your National Guard troops, Harriet?
Exactly. Where are the troops? Is there going to be any provision, or is Bush going to write this off as unnecessary environment?
Good question. Bernie, do you know anything about that?
That's a good question. What Harriet is raising is all over this country, we're seeing so many National Guards people over in Iraq that many states don't have the help that they need to deal with potential emergencies, as we're looking towards in Washington.
Yeah, and the governor of Montana has just asked for his National Guard troops back. John in Pennsylvania on the line. Hey, John, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom. Hello.
You're live and on the air, John.
Hi, Congressman. Yes, three things. The first one on the bankruptcy bill, I just want all the listeners to know, politology.us, there's actually a coalition of liberal and conservative blogs that are opposed to this, and there you'll find the phone numbers of every senator that voted for this bankruptcy bill, and people are like calling them today. I already did. I called both of my PA senators and gave them a piece of my mind for that.
Yeah. And let me just, John, let me just interject here. The phone number for Congress, and you can reach any member of the House or the Senate with this one single telephone number, area code 202-224-3121. Finish, John.
Do it, everybody. Very important to let them know. Congressman, do you think that, I understand, I'm tying this in with, there is something going on out there where a bill was introduced to deal with bloggers somehow?
Okay.
In terms of raising money for campaigns?
Yeah, and I think that's been kind of debunked, that wasn't.
Yes, that's correct. Yeah, that's my understanding.
So, John, you can calm down and relax on that one. And I'm sorry, we're pretty much out of time here, I believe. I'm expecting, there we go. Sometimes the clock is 2 seconds late. But we're pretty much out of time. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, good to be with you.
You're going to keep up this great work on this Patriot Act work, and people should contact their representatives, their elected representatives, and ask them to support what you're doing.
Absolutely.
Okay, great. Number for Congress, 202-224-3121. Thanks so much, Congressman Sanders, for being with us today. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program. where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not some right-wing think tank or the RNC or a industry trade group or, well, you get the picture.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. Exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. A letter here from, an email, rather, from Graham in the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. Part of the Bush Banana Republic, formerly the USA, he says. I just wrote to my Senator Bingaman to express my horror at his voting yay for this bankruptcy bill. He says, I was surprised to see that your Senator Jim Jeffords also voted yes. I was surprised too, so I called Senator Jeffords' office this morning and I said, why did he vote on this thing? And they said, well, your guy named Eric on his staff is going to call me back. He's the legislative liaison or whatever. He's going to call me back and tell me why Senator Jeffords voted the way he did on this bill. And so if he calls while we're on the air, we'll ask him if he would like to explain to all of us why he voted this way on this bill. I'd love to hear it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, by the way. And if you'd like to drop into our chat room, tomhartman.com, it's Friday afternoon. You can call any topic you want to call about. I've got a bunch of Q&As here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to have on folks from BuzzFlash and from CommonDreams.org, and we're going to go over the news of the week, what's happening, what might we have missed, what's coming up, and what's hot today. The overview of the news. In the meantime, Doug in Connecticut is on the line. Hey, Doug, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how are you?
Great. What's up?
I was outraged about this bill, too, the bankruptcy bill. I'm tired of bills being written by corporations for corporations. You know, as far as I can see, the banks are the only ones who benefit here.
Yeah, let's once again give the phone number for Congress. This is the number that I called, and I simply said I'd like to speak with Senator Jeffords' office in my case. I would recommend that you call and ask for your senator and ask why, you know, how did they vote on this, and if they voted in favor of it, why. The number 202-224-3121. And, of course, it's perhaps now is a good time to be calling your member of the House, because the House has not yet voted on this and you know, raising some stink about this. So, anyway,
saying. What I did last night is I cut up my credit card. I'm cold turkey. I'll get through it.
Yeah.
And I'm sending the pieces, taping them to letters, and sending them into my to the representatives, the Democratic representatives who voted for this thing.
Uh-huh. It's like the teabag thing.
Like the teabag or the Eisenhower Rice for China deal way back in the 50s.
Oh, my. I was a little kid in the 50s, but I remember a story about Rice for China.
Yeah, there was a famine in China, and Eisenhower at the time was talking about going to war with China.
Yeah, and like 30 million people died, didn't they?
Sent little bags of rice to the White House, thousands and thousands of bags of rice, and it was Rice for Peace, or Food for Peace, I think.
Interesting.
Sort of the same idea here, yeah. But, you know, these credit card companies can charge us whatever interest they want if you're a day late at the $25 or $30 fee, and now they have the bankruptcy bill to boot. So.
Well, and to make it worse, more than half of all bankruptcies in America are the result of medical disasters that happen to people, which shouldn't happen in a wealthy industrialized nation. We should have national health insurance.
Absolutely.
So number one, that shouldn't even be happening. And then of the other half of the bankruptcies, somewhere between a half and two-thirds of them are the direct result of somebody either losing their job or getting divorced, and it's a woman with children, and the child support's not coming through, and they can't pay the bills any longer. And so you're left with this little sliver, maybe one-sixth of people, who just, you know, made dumb decisions and drowned in this stuff. And, of course, there are a few people who go out and run up big bills and then declare bankruptcy. And those people go to jail because that's called fraud. It's already against the law. We don't need legislation to stop people from doing that. It's damn near impossible to do anyway. Although there is this asset protection trust provision that the Senate made sure that they kept in the bankruptcy legislation, that if you're a millionaire or a billionaire, you can declare bankruptcy and keep your money.
Well, you know, and we could use some help with limiting what they can do. They used to be called usury. And,
yes.
And there used to be laws against
it. It's still called usury.
Now I guess they could charge potentially 100% interest.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's up to 30%, I've heard, in some cases.
It is.
That's just,
it's outrageous. Yeah, up until 19, I think it was 77 or 78 when Nixon's inflation got out of control and they had to undo the usury. But we used to have federal usury laws. Most states had usury laws that capped interest at 10%. And anything over 10% was considered usury. I mean, you figure, I think it's at 8%. Every 10 years, it basically doubles the balance. I mean, it's pretty mind-boggling when you consider it. Anyhow, Doug, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I do appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tony in Washington, D.C. on the line. Hey, Tony, what's up?
How you doing? Keep telling the truth any way you can and loud.
There you go. There you go, Tony. And you too.
Thank you so much. I am going to re-up, get my get into politics. I participated in you, and it's thanks to your program that made me get off the seat.
That's great. What'd you do?
I'm trying to get with our local NAACP. I contribute to the campaign.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say because I'm at work. So
okay. So you're getting active in your own way. That's great.
Yeah,
that's
great. And because it's a secure line, I think you know about that.
Sure. Yeah. Well, good on you, Tony.
Thank you. But I have to own a philosophy because I didn't learn about the president's faux pas. I mean, their public faux pas. When I'm talking about that, about they were all slave owners until I got older, and it hits me as I was going home and said, yeah, they have good public policies, but also the other public policies up there, I think even up to what Lincoln, all of them had either a direct or indirect association with people who owned slaves. So it seems like the public psyche that the public wants us to see, you know, great men, you know, they want looking out for the small guy, you know, and small women, but they also participate in making sure that people like myself, 3/5 of, you know, black.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made
me. At least your ancestors, yeah.
Yeah, they made me what I am. You know, I didn't come here to be like this.
Yeah.
Do you understand what I'm trying to say?
I do. And not to minimize slavery at all, but yesterday we were in a lawyer's office and hanging on his wall was a certificate of indenture from the 1600s. There were an awful lot of folks who came over from Europe in the 1600s and 1700s.
Irish.
Who came over, largely Irish, but also from other parts of Europe, who came over essentially, they would sign 10, 15-year, basically, slavery agreements. They had more rights than African slaves did, but it was a tough time. That's not at all to minimize it or explain it away. I absolutely agree with you. It was a horrible thing, and public policy and private policy have historically been rather different, shall we say? I mean, right down to Jack Kennedy and Marilyn Monroe.
Oh, absolutely.
But the reality is that we still have these archetypes, these notions, these ideals in this country, and I think that it's really important for us to focus on the ideals that we have held. The extent to which we sit around and say, George Washington held slaves. Therefore, we should throw out everything he said. I'm not sure that that's a good idea.
No. I'm not telling him to take the baby, but toss the baby with the bathwater is the overall antithesis of treating your fellow man like as though they were part of your family.
Yeah.
But
in
practice, when it comes down to, you know, when they put it on paper, they say, well, it seems to me, and then I'll get off, well, the white man, you know, still comes first.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's signing the
it is still
Declaration
happening.
Of Independence. The,
yeah.
You know, and the Bill of Rights, it still was the white man still come first. And I may hate.
Actually, let me just correct a misconception. It wasn't in most of the northern states when the Declaration of Independence was signed and when the Constitution was signed and when the Bill of Rights 2 years later was amended to it.
Right.
There were many free blacks in the northern states who voted, who held property, who had full rights of citizenship.
And we're all slave owners.
And yeah, and in the South there were some free blacks who were slave owners.
Right.
That was such a small minority that it's almost right. inconsequential. But the point is that there are people who say, oh, the Constitution was only for white landowning men. What happened was, actually, over time, that became the case. So that by, you know, in the 1780s, 1790s, that was, other than down in the Deep South, that was more the exception than the rule. By the 1830s, 1840s, that was becoming increasingly rule. I mean, women were voting in the 1780s and 1790s.
That's true.
And so it's not in the Constitution. It was left to the states. And that was the big shift that the Civil War brought about, was the shift of power from the states to the federal government. And the federal government essentially saying, okay, we're going to tell the states, for example, you can't have slavery anymore. And you know, the South decided to fight a war over that, and they lost, and so now we have, you know, the strong federal government. That was a real significant turning point in American history.
But did you hear the comment about Jim Graham's about not celebrating the Lincoln Day, because he says we're still trying to get over it.
Wasn't that Lindsey Graham?
Lindsey Graham, sorry. Yeah, South Carolina.
Yeah, I just read that in the paper this morning, and that's Lindsey.
I said, how long? They tell us not to get over it. Progressive.
I know.
Take care now.
Well, yeah, Tony, thanks a lot for the call. It's good to hear from you. Yeah, Lindsey Graham, one of the guys who led the Let's Impeach Bill Clinton because he's morally, because of his moral failures. Lindsey Graham now saying he's not going to celebrate Lincoln's birthday because he can't get over what Lincoln did to his people. Right? He made them stop owning slaves. Come on, give me a break. The American way of life, moving along. The American way of life, and good to hear from you, Tony. You always raise good issues. The American way of life is taking a hit from a crumbling infrastructure, says a new report. The American Society of Civil Engineers. This is not exactly the Audubon Society, right? This is the American Society of Civil Engineers. These are your basic hard-nosed folks, you know, pencil pushers. They figure they know how to do the math. They know how to do geometry. They know how bridges work and water systems and power grids. And what they're saying basically is that by giving huge tax cuts to millionaires and billionaires and fighting an unnecessary war in a far-off land, simply because there may be some oil and some profits for Halliburton there, that we are basically leaving America behind. This is the Leave America Behind crowd, the Republicans, the conservatives. Leave America Behind. A report being released today by the American, this is my phrase, not the American Society of Civil Engineers. Let me be quick to note. A report being released today, this is in the Associated Press, by the American Society of Civil Engineers, gives our crumbling infrastructure a rating of D, down from a D+ 2 years ago. They're talking about roads, water systems, the electric power grid, public parks, bridges. Today's report card says Americans are spending more time stuck in traffic and less time at home with their families. It would take more than $1.5 trillion, they say, over the next 5 years to fix things. $1.5 trillion over 5 years. Now, if I'm doing my math right, that's that would be $30 billion, $300 billion a year. 3 times 5 is 15. Yeah, $300 billion a year. That's about, if you add together the cost of the war in Iraq and the cost of the tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, it's about that much money. It's about $300 billion a year. And that's how much they say it's going to take to bring America back to where it was during the golden age of the American middle class, when we actually had infrastructure that worked. What a disaster. What a disaster this administration is bringing this country. Although China is growing like crazy. They are just absolutely growing like crazy, and General Electric is loving every minute of it. 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Don't give up faith. Just spread the good word. Get active. Get involved. Join something. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party, the Greens, the Progressives, democracyforamerica.org, moveon.org. Get out there, start participating. And let the corporate-owned conservative media of America, the networks, the big newspaper chains, let them know when you see that they are spinning the news as they are wont to do. Liberal Center in our chat room, which you can reach at tomhartman.com, Liberal Center points out that the bankruptcy reform law that was just passed by the Senate could very easily be considered actually an anti-woman bill. And this is an aspect of this that, frankly, I'm surprised hasn't gotten more press. If you have a man and a woman married and they are in debt, as most families are in America, and she wants to leave the marriage and she doesn't have a career. Now, if she leaves with half the debt, right now the only option to avoid disaster is bankruptcy, and that option has just been removed because about a sixth of all bankruptcies in America are women who are on the other side of a divorce. And why isn't anybody talking about that, Victoria Jones? Hey, Victoria Jones, Talk Radio News Service on the air. Hey.
Hey. Wow. Continue with that thought because I'm horrified by what I'm hearing.
Yeah, I mean, that this just this
I
is a person in the
chat.
I did
not know this about women that are coming out of divorces.
Yeah, that's of all the people who declared bankruptcy in the United States last year, about half of them were wiped out because of medical expenses.
Right, that I knew.
And about a quarter of them were a little more than a quarter, about a third of them, were either they either lost their job or they were women who were recently divorced. And, of course, they split the assets in half. They split the debt in half. The guy's got a job. The woman was at home. She doesn't have a job. She doesn't have an income. Or if she does have a job, women tend to make less than men in America. But she's got half the credit card debt. She can't afford to pay it. She declares bankruptcy. They're saying, no, you can't do that anymore. So the cons can say, well, you know, these women, they're going to have to stay in these marriages.
Well, now, they're saying she can't declare bankruptcy, but she still gets divorced, then what happens when she can't pay the bills? What are they going to do, put her in debtor's prison or what?
Well, actually, there are some hospitals, and I had a story on this a couple of months ago. There are a few hospitals now that have actually succeeded in putting people in jail for not paying their bills. Yes.
So we're going back to that old concept of debtor's prison.
That's the conservative way. It's...
Wow.
Anyhow, I'm sure you have a report from Washington, D.C.
Wow.
What's happening there, Victoria?
Nothing as exciting as that. Well, being Friday, everybody's heading out of town because they've done their 3 days' work on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But really, one of the big things is responding to the report that came out yesterday by Vice Admiral Church on possible abuses at Guantanamo Bay, Abu Ghraib, and in Afghanistan. I talked to you about this briefly yesterday because I've been in.
Oop, we lost Victoria. Victoria just vanished. In the meantime, let's ask Chris in Abiquiu, New Mexico, what's up. Hey, Chris.
Hey, do you scare a lot of people away? You know that, don't you?
I think it was and Gonzalez pushed the button. anyhow, we got about 30 seconds here. What's up, Chris?
I was saying with Iraq, I think the greatest spin news story coming out of the national media, I saw it just last night. What a great thing it is that recruitment, in spite of the bloodshed, is up for the Iraqi security services. Don't people understand that means the Shia are arming themselves, or rather, we're arming the Shia?
Well, in fact, nobody's talking about it, but there are several Shia armies that already exist. Sadr has one of them. And these people are being brought into the fold. And I just don't think most Americans realize it. But
it's called a civil war, and we shouldn't be participating.
There you go.
But we shouldn't be there in the first place.
There you go.
Good day, man.
Thanks, Chris. Good point. Hey, Victoria, we got about 10 seconds left. You wanted to wrap something up? I'm sorry. We lost you. I don't know what happened.
Neither do I. So this Church report on abuse is woefully inadequate. In fact, the New York Times says it's a whitewash.
Yeah. Well, you're going to hire a guy to investigate the system, but he can't look at his boss. I mean, that's basically the bottom line here. Rumsfeld hires him and then says, check this out, right? He's going to really tell us about Rumsfeld. Victoria, thanks so much. I'm sorry we got dumped there. 29 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, the True People's Radio.
Haven, Connecticut.
This is
the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you, broadcasting live on radio stations from Oregon and California to West Virginia, North Carolina, and all places in between. Many places, actually streaming down on the Sirius satellite system all across North America, even Mexico and Canada. 29 states on cable radio network, CRN Digital. Welcome back to our program. It's time for our best of the rest of the news segment, our second hour of Friday afternoon. What's going on in the alternative media? What's going on in the news out here? We have Brandy Neal, who is an assistant editor at CommonDreams.org. Hello, Brandy.
Hi, Tom.
And we have Mark Carlin, who's the editor and founder of BuzzFlash.com. Hey, Mark, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Tom.
It's great to have you both here. The two of my favorite, absolute favorite websites, the great sources for news and information. And let's start with you, Mark, if you don't mind. What in the over the last week did you think were really the biggest stories and the ones that really, if somebody hadn't caught them, they really need to know about today as we go into the weekend? What are the things that are going to have some kind of lasting impact or consequence on us as a society?
There's been an emergence in the mainstream print press of questioning the practice of Bush administration renditions, which are flying terrorists or people who are accused of being terrorists from the United States to countries where they can be tortured, in essence.
Right.
And today in the New York Times, there was a story largely written from the perspective of the administration as sort of a co-opted advanced leak, where the administration indicated someone from the Pentagon that they were going to actually increase this practice in the near future and try to get 150 more detainees in Guantanamo transferred to countries that, in essence, practice torture.
Yeah. Now, Mark, my take on that is that what's going on is that the courts have ruled against the administration and said you can't just keep people here forever, you know, in Guantanamo, in our concentration camp down there. And so the administration is trying to get rid of these folks. They're afraid that if they simply release them, like they did with those Brits, that they will go to the press and say, here's what happened to me while I was there, and we'll be embarrassed all over again. And so they want to turn them over to countries that will basically lock them up and you know, kill them, torture them, whatever, but, you know, make them disappear. And so that way, A, they don't have to deal with them in the U.S. court system anymore. We don't have to pay to keep them. And B, they don't pop up on the ABC Evening News. Do you think that might be the motive here in this whole thing?
I think that's a big factor, and you've kind of hit upon a big hidden point here that's not discussed in the Times article, because the Times article is written largely from the administration.
I read that Times article this morning. I didn't see one single mention of the fact that the administration had been ruled against by the Supreme Court on these cases, and yet it seems to me like that would be the main thing that would cause them to want to offload these people so quickly, because they don't want to have trials for them. They're going to look like fools if they have trials for them.
A key assumption in what you're saying here is that the courts have ruled that you have to, in essence, prove someone is guilty of a crime.
Or at least there's a good probable cause to believe that they are.
A probable cause.
Yeah.
And what the administration basically is left with is that most of these people at Guantanamo, they cannot do that with. The people they released to Britain after a lot of to-do by Tony Blair were not charged with anything in Britain. They were released to Britain, and they're living openly in Britain. They are guilty of no crime as far as Britain is concerned. If these were terrorists, I'm certain they would have been jailed in Britain.
Yeah, certainly Tony Blair would have done something.
And other people have been released from Guantanamo, sent back with like a new pair of clothes and $10 to Afghanistan and that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So if we indeed had people being basically at a minimum psychologically tortured in Guantanamo, and there are indications that there was torture equal to what occurred occurred at Abu Ghraib in Guantanamo. We, in essence, were doing this to at least to a sizable percentage of quote-unquote innocent people by the very nature of the fact that they're being released and not charged.
Yeah, man, this is...
And so what you're saying, I think, is absolutely true. They're being sent back to their quote-unquote home countries where torture is legal, where they will either disappear or just be released.
Yeah. Yeah, and they won't have access to the press. And if they try and speak out, these are, you know, you try and speak out against the government in Saudi Arabia, for example, if you're a Saudi citizen, you're toast. I mean, that's it. You're toast. Okay, Mark Carlin, thank you for your insights on that one. Brandy Neal with CommonDreams.org. What is your sense, Brandy, of the big story, the big issue for the week?
Well, yesterday we just had an article that we posted by Norman Solomon about MoveOn.org, which in the past have been instrumental in the alternative media as an anti-war activism group, withdrawing its support basically for the movement, and basically switching sides, saying that their members no longer support opposition to the war, and they're going to focus on more domestic mainstream issues, which is mm-hmm. just a huge blow to our what we're trying to do.
To the anti-war, basically. To the anti-war effort. Now, I read that article, and it seemed to me, he was quoting Eli Parser, who, maybe I'm mispronouncing his last name, but I've had Eli on this program a couple of times.
Right.
And he's a decent guy. And it seemed to me that what Eli was saying basically was, you know, we poll our members, we ask them what they want us to be doing, after all, they support this group, and we do what they say. And so why pick on MoveOn.org?
Basically, just because they gained a lot of their members early on by being with a strong anti-war message, pushing for withdrawal for U.S. troops from Iraq.
Right.
And it seems what Norman was saying is they basically have not polled since late last year.
Yeah.
So.
Interesting. My sense of Norman's piece was almost that he was. And I don't want to certainly put words in his mouth. He's very articulate and can speak well for himself. But let's discuss the issue rather than his piece. It seemed to me that there are many, many of us in the progressive, liberal, whatever you call it, spectrum, who want there to be a leadership organization, want an organization to stand up and say, we're mad as hell, and we're not going to take it anymore. And we're going to get out of, you know, and impeach Bush and get out of Iraq. And, well, get out of Iraq specifically, and right. stand up and take a stand. And in the kind of, you know, Will Rogers joke where he said, you know, I'm not a member of an organized political party. I'm a Democrat. You know, in that psychology, as it were, here we have progressive organizations who are rather reluctant to get out in front of issues in a way that might be perceived as leadership, but rather are trying to follow their members. And there are people, you know, among us, I'm one of them, who think that, and obviously Norman Solomon is, who think that may be a mistake, that organizations really should be taking a position, and, you know, whether public opinion is with them or not. But then the organizations are saying, but you know, the public supports us and we got to do the same. My sense of it is that any organization that isn't taking strong positions right now is shooting themselves in the foot.
I absolutely agree with that, because people want to get behind something that stands for something. If you don't know what an organization stands for, then why are you supporting them in the first place?
Yeah. Yeah. And unless these groups, and let's generalize this beyond just MoveOn.org, because that's, you know, one of many progressive groups that have emerged, you know, ACT, Americans Coming Together is another. There's a whole bunch of really good groups out there that really emerged either out of the invasion of Afghanistan and then the invasion of Iraq, or emerged as a result of the election, that have now sort of, it seems, lost their voices or lost their way.
Right. Especially as they get bigger, they kind of seem to lose their cause.
So what can be done about this beyond just saying, hey folks, you know, let's do something? I mean,
I'm not sure. I mean, it's hard to, you know, teach somebody else how to maintain integrity or, you know, I guess it's all, you know, public opinion. Another big story we have is also the Central American Free Trade Agreement.
Yes, CAFTA.
That is proposed, yes, CAFTA. It's being opposed by many groups, such as Public Citizen and Stop CAFTA Coalition. And basically, Lori Wallach, the director of Public Citizen's Global Trade Watch, says we heard the same projections about new jobs and economic gains from NAFTA, and now a decade later, we know they were all lies.
Yeah.
Here's the same source using the same fraudulent methodology to try to sell us old NAFTA wine and new CAFTA bottles.
Yep. Now, by the way, here you have Public Citizen, a group that Ralph Nader actually founded, and the American Civil Liberties Union, which goes back a long, long ways, and they're very clear about what they're about, and they're not at all unwilling to jump out and take a stand. Maybe it's just that these newer groups haven't yet gotten their sea legs. You know, maybe they haven't yet rooted deep enough in their constituencies to really have a sense of what direction they should go charging off in.
Right, that's a possibility.
And evolution, political evolution, as it were, will simply help them along. And the critique of them and their process is probably part of that problem. But CAFTA, so what do you think is going to happen with CAFTA?
It's definitely receiving a lot of opposition. Scott Paul of the AFL-CIO says that absolutely no Democrats are standing behind it, just proving how unpopular the agreement is.
Right.
There's been huge protests in Guatemala. It's going up for ratification in Guatemala, supposedly, as we speak. And President Berger has threatened to call in military to reinforce the hordes of police currently surrounding the legislative chambers.
Interesting. And really, rather than debating whether or not we should be signing CAFTA, in my opinion, we should be debating whether or not we should be withdrawing from NAFTA and the World
Absolutely.
Trade Organization. I mean, this is public policy that's just devastating, not only the United States, but the, quote, poorer or less developed countries, end quote, who are basically what's happened is we have, through these treaties, we have said, okay, nation states don't matter anymore. What matters now are transnational corporations. They're the
right.
ones who make the rule. They're the ones who profit. If it helps them, that's what we're going to go with. If it doesn't help them, then we're not going to go with it. And we've got a bought and sold House and Senate Do you see Brandy Neal with CommonDreams.org? Do you see any sense of in the future any change in this? Do you think the wind might blow in another direction?
I would like to think so. With NAFTA between 1989 and 2002, California alone lost more than 315,000 jobs.
Yeah.
So just as the facts begin to roll in, hopefully people can realize and take a stand against it, but
okay.
I don't really see any changes legislatively.
Well, hopefully we can stir some stuff up. We have Brandy Neal with CommonDreams.org, and we have Mark Carlin, editor and founder of BuzzFlash.com, two of the finest news websites on the entire Internet. For both of you, Jeff in Denver, one of our listeners, is on the line. Jeff, you had a question?
Well, just it's a comment of the thing of the progressive movement and the leadership of actually organizations following the membership. I'm dealing with several organizations right now, and that's a really hot topic that I think actually Common Dreams and BuzzFlash might address, of whether we need leaders or followers. So many people, it's hard to get the membership active in these groups without actually really strong leadership. That's the thing that we're lacking.
Yeah. Good point, Jeff.
And I think Move On is actually making a mistake with that too much. I mean, we're trying to be nice to our membership.
Yeah.
But we've really got to stand up and say, hey, damn it, we're going to do this.
There you go. There you go.
Yeah.
Well said. Jeff, thanks a lot for – whoa, hang on just a second. You still – rats. I punched the wrong button, and I lost Brandy.
Oh, I'm still here.
No, okay, I lost Mark. Okay. Well, Brandy, while Ira is dialing Mark back on line one, very quickly, what do you see as happening in the future? What are the future issues that you see coming up?
Well, basically, we're definitely going to keep a very close eye on the Arctic refuge drilling proposal that the Bush administration is trying to push through, which will compromise more than 1.5 million acres of coastal plain.
And will provide us with about 6 months' worth of oil.
Right.
And it won't even start coming in for 8 or 10 years.
Right.
But it'll make billions of dollars for the oil industry.
What's that?
But it'll make billions of dollars for the oil industry.
Right, while destroying caribou and one of the last unspoiled habitats in the United States.
Yeah.
And also Social Security. We're definitely keeping a close eye on what's going on with Bush's proposed Social Security privatization.
Do you think that that is – I'm increasingly getting the sense that thing is dead in the water. And, in fact,
yeah,
it's going to be his
so.
Waterloo.
He's still touring to promote to try to push it through, but I think it's reaching a lot of opposition.
Yeah, I agree. And Mark Carlin back on the line. I'm sorry I dumped you, Mark. There, I pushed the wrong button when I dropped Jeff. And boom, off you went. But Mark, what we've got about a minute and a half, 2 minutes here left. What do you see as the hot topics coming up in the next weeks and months? What do you see on the horizon that we should be keeping our eyes out for?
Well, I think we've got a bull loose in the China shop with the nomination of Mr. Bolton to be our ambassador to the United Nations. I mean, here is a man who basically is a Jesse Helms protege who doesn't believe the United Nations should exist, nor that the United States should cooperate with other nations,
mm-hmm.
being our country's official emissary to a group of nations that are united to try to disrupt global problems. Now,
yeah, it's like putting a rapist in charge.
I think it's up for disaster there. Mr. Bolton has also been one of the most extreme neocons urging the bombing of Syria and Iran and North Korea, among others.
Yeah.
He looks a bit like a walrus, but this guy is...
He's toxic. He's toxic. He's really toxic. Okay, great. Mark Carlin, Brandy Neal. Mark Carlin with BuzzFlash.com. Brandy Neal with CommonDreams.org. Thank you both so much for being with us today for our...
Thank you, Tom.
Best of the rest
Thanks,
of the news
Tom.
Segment. Thanks, and we'll talk to you both soon. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 10 minutes before the hour. Talk radio for the rest of us.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you...
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 5 minutes before the hour. In the Darwinian world of ideas, we're at the top of the food chain. Right here on the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where reason and passion go together like Republican presidents and gay hookers. 1-866-889-8894, telephone number. Peter in New York on the line. Hey, Peter, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
I am great, but I'll get better. What's up, Peter?
This is Nephilim from the Daily Kos. I had a brief email discussion with you not too long ago. Calling to share another piece of news. It's actually from last Friday.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very important, most significant piece of policy
and that is
from the King County Bar Association out of Seattle. They wrote to the Washington State Legislature and put forth a full proposal for drug law reform, and it's the first such thing we've seen in a very, very long time. And it's quite important for people in Washington State to contact their representatives and say they support this.
We had something like this introduced into the Vermont legislature last week just as well.
Oh, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah, it was a local story. It was in the local newspaper, because, you know, it's a Vermont state legislature. But it was basically to I think it just dealt with the marijuana, to make it a regulated rather than an illegal and unregulated substance.
Well, that was one aspect of this thing they proposed, but they proposed full reform. You can read the entire thing. I posted a diary about it on the Daily Kos, or you can go to Pete's Drug War Rant. I don't know the address. It's one of the salon blogs.
Yeah, but just dailykos.com is always a good place to go every day anyway.
Yep. So,
okay, Peter, thanks a lot. I appreciate the call, and thanks for the tip.
Thanks, Tom.
Good talking with you. Mark, Rick in Michigan on the line. Hey, Rick, we've got about 20 seconds left. What's up?
Hi, Tom. They put Tommy Chong in jail for selling bongs on the Internet.
Yeah.
Yet they elect Dolper to the White House and his right-wing mouth spokesman is also a druggie himself.
Who's that?
Rush Lum Slimebag.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And they're all a bunch of chicken hawks. The only military person he had left, and that's Powell. So, you know, this country is definitely going in the wrong directly.
Yeah, we have a nation governed by irony at the moment, Rick.
Yeah, and I saw a T-shirt the other day that said it all. It said, "Stop complaining and start the revolution."
There you go. Rick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Make it a peaceful revolution, though. We have a history of doing those. We did it with Roosevelt. We can do it again. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, exposing the con in conservative as we return democracy to the United States of America.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
President Bush today, this just in from the IWR News Parody Service. President Bush today revealed his secret plan to save Social Security and fund private savings accounts. In short, it's from InternetWeekly.org. In short, the Bush plan would cut costs by outsourcing senior citizens to third world countries like India or Mississippi, where medical and housing costs would be provided by the lowest bidder. George W. said, "The idea came to us when Karl Rove and me were brainstorming." Well, Karl was, anyway. I was just listening to John Ashcroft kick out the jams on my iPod. Anyway, after a while, I said to Carl, "It's too bad we can't just outsource all these old codgers to India like our business buddies do with all those high-tech jobs that Kerry was always whining about." Well, the next thing you know, Carl is on the horn to Jon Snow, and we got us a humdinger of a plan. Here's how it'd work. When a senior reaches retirement age, we will still guarantee that person's check, but instead of $2,000, for example, it will be 2,000 rupees. The government will send retirees via an empty oil tanker or shipping container free of charge to Calcutta, where the old fogies will be provided best accommodations that their rupees could buy, said Mr. Bush. Seriously, though, our resident right-winger in our chat room, bring him on, makes the point. He says 60% of young people, those under 30 in the United States, support so-called personal private accounts. I think pretty much everybody, if you say, you know, I support private accounts, people should have retirement accounts, they should have 401ks, they should have IRAs, they Roth IRAs, SEP accounts, whatever. I mean, everybody, so I would think. But in any case, he points out that if Bush plays his cards right on this thing, if he can truly succeed in convincing people under 30 in America, people who have little sense of history, people who didn't study civics in school, people who don't know that the leading cause of death among people over 50 back in the 1930s was conditions related to poverty, like starvation and freezing to death. People who don't get it, that Social Security was an insurance system to protect widows, orphans, people who are injured and can no longer work, and to protect us from poverty in old age. Just a floor, not a retirement program, an insurance program. That if those people under 30 who don't understand these things, because they never learned them in school, because we don't teach civics anymore, which is wonderful for the conservatives. I mean, people don't understand the history of this country. They don't understand what people have been through. They don't understand how these programs work. And if we can, if the Bush administration can convince these younger people that somehow the Democrats are withholding from them some juicy benefit by being opposed to privatizing part of Social Security, that there goes the youth vote for the Democrats, as Brigham on says. It's a good point. And it's a really sad commentary. I mean, a truly sad commentary on the state of affairs in America, that Bush is able to succeed in convincing young people of these, to quote Congressman Bernie Sanders, lies. It's a tragedy. Gerrymandering. A couple of days ago, I was talking about gerrymandering. We were talking about, and somebody sent me Mike from the black hole of the belly of the beast. Mike, in fact, who had called the program that day, I believe, he sent me this definition of gerrymandering. It's just great. This is here. Eldridge Gerry was one of the signers of the Declaration of Independence. He was a member of Jefferson's Democratic Republican Party, now known as the Democratic Party. An anti-federalist. And in 1812, he became the governor of Massachusetts. His party, which back then the Democratic Republicans, now the Democrats, redrew district lines to weight representation in their favor and against the Federalists, who were the conservatives of the day. And actually, Gerry, as governor of Massachusetts in 1812, was opposed to them doing that. But nonetheless, he was the governor, and it was his party, and they did it. And a Federalist newspaper, the Federalists of the day would be today called Republicans, a Federalist newspaper published a political cartoon depicting the oddly shaped district covering Essex County, Massachusetts, as a salamander. And the cartoonist dubbed his creation a gerrymander, and thus the word. Eldridge Gerry, signer of the Declaration of Independence, and governor of Massachusetts in 1812 when gerrymandering began. And even though he wasn't personally responsible for it, we still have his name. Scott sends me an email. I've emailed Debbie Stabenow's office asking why she voted for the bankruptcy bill and why she felt it was good for us in Michigan when we have the highest unemployment rate in the nation. Of course, as you know, losing one's job is one of the top reasons people file for bankruptcy. I also asked her what amendments she proposed or sponsored that would make this bill better for the people she represented. I haven't received a reply, but if I do, I'll forward it to you. If I don't get a response today, I'll call her office on Monday. So I look forward to hearing back from you, Scott. I similarly have a call into my senator, Jim Jeffords, who apparently also voted for this disaster for working people in America, and particularly a disaster for women in America. Sally Ann sends me an email. She says, as Francis Bacon, that would be Sir Francis Bacon, the 16th century Bacons, pointed out in a letter to the Lord of Essex in 1598, opportunity makes a thief. She goes on to say, according to World News this morning, 311, George W. Bush is paying for his internet campaign against Social Security and for his shell game of privatization with funds from Social Security and the Treasury. In effect, the funds are not being used for their primary purpose, aiding Americans, but are being stolen. His campaign against Social Security, he and his cabinet making 62 campaign stops, can also be assumed to be being financed by Social Security and Treasury. In other words, by a flick of his pen, he takes taxpayer money to destroy a great social program. Yep. Welcome to Bush World. This from a listener in... Actually, I'm not sure where. It just says outside the United States from a listener with a Chinese name. And I won't name this person just on the chance that I'm guessing by the URL that this person is actually in Hong Kong. And I know that politically speaking out in that country is getting increasingly dangerous. Dear Tom, the faults of the 2004 election are becoming ancient history for most Americans. That's how resigned or jubilant they are to where the country is headed. The reason why we won't likely see any Ukraine-style protests in the U.S. anytime soon is because of our faith in the soundness of our own democracy, and this faith is misplaced. Outside the U.S., where I am right now, the view of American democracy is considerably more cynical. This from Warren in New York City. He says, great column in Common Dreams today. This is the piece that I wrote saying that we have a problem with these voting machines. And we need to prepare for stolen elections in 2006. This is something that, frankly, I think that it would be great if a group like MoveOn.org was to take on. And there is a model, there is a template, and it has worked in four nations, well, three out of four nations. It's been tried in four nations so far, in Belarus, in Serbia, in the Soviet Republic of Georgia, and in Ukraine, and worked in three of those. It didn't. In Belarus, they were able to squash the opposition, but... I think it could be done in the United States. And you can learn more about that by going to commondreams.org and reading the piece that I wrote. Or if you subscribe to our newsletter, you will have gotten an email today. Anyhow, Warren says, it's easy to believe the 2004 election was honest. Just factor out motive and opportunity and think lovely thoughts. Bush means to save Social Security, clean the skies, make America safe. Oh, and yes, spread democracy. And keep saying this to yourself, this is America. Soon someone on the left is going to go Luddite on the electoral process, hack some machines in real time, and expose the fraud. Now, this is an idea. Not that I would recommend or ever advocate anybody doing anything illegal. But Warren in New York is saying, what would happen if a Democrat were to hack a machine and produce a 100,000-to-1 vote, doesn't matter which way, in a few contested districts, and send the press an anonymous note to the effect of, so far you've been doing a dime store imitation of Pravda, now you've hit the big time, you get to spin a Stalinist election. Interesting. Well, as I said, Howard Dean did it on TV. He hacked a Diebold central tabulating system. This is what Teresa Heinz Kerry was talking about in Seattle on Monday. He hacked into a Diebold central tabulating system. This is the computer that all the voting machines feed their data into, and changed, reversed the outcome of an election, did it in 90 seconds on national live TV when he was the host, the fill-in host for Tina Brown on her CNBC television program, Topic A with Tina Brown. This was back in, as I recall, September. And did the corporate media in the United States pick up the story? Did you see the New York Times Corporation, the Washington Post Corporation, General Electric, the big defense contractor, owner of NBC and MSNBC, Microsoft, co-owner of MSNBC? Did you see, Disney, ABC? Did you see Viacom, CBS? Did you see any of these huge multinational corporations pick up on the story that corporate-owned voting machines could be hacked? I didn't. The corporate conservative media in the United States would rather not discuss issues like this, you know? Just rather not discuss it. In fact, this from Joe in Medford, Mass. He says, my friend and I listen to your show at work in Medford, Mass. We're both big fans. You brought up the fact that right-wing news sites are filled with ads for picking up women, increasing apparatus size, etc., while most liberal sites carry ads for books and whatnot. A couple of weeks ago, we ran into this ad on Newsmax.com for Israeli combat training videos for U.S. civilians so they can fight terrorists. The language used in this ad is both hilarious and frightening. Moreover, it seems to be more about obliterating not just terrorists, but anyone who, quote, gets in your face, end quote. It seems bully tactics are both literal and literal for some right-wing supporters. I think he means to say that bully tactics are both literary and literal for some right-wing supporters. Anyhow, here's a link. And I actually went to Newsmax.com, and there it is. I mean, it's outrageous. Not outrageous. It's an interesting insight into the minds of folks like Bring 'Em On in our chat room. You go to these right-wing websites, and most of the ads are for genital enhancement, make yourself more muscular, how to do death throws, right? I mean, how to kill somebody with your bare hands. There's one, a picture of Arnold Schwarzenegger says, he's rich, you can be too. How to get rich. And you have to wonder, I mean, you know, who is reading these sites and, you know, where are they, you know, what is up? Anyhow, on our website, on TomHartmann.com, and those ads there are supplied by Google, for what that's worth. In any case, on TomHartmann.com, on our message board, we have an ongoing thread that says questions to ask Tom and he'll answer them on the air. And so for the rest of the program, I will be doing this. We have a bunch of them here, some interesting ones, some really, really thought-provoking questions we're going to get into. Plus, if you'd like to call in, our number 1-866-889-8894. Nice Friday afternoon here. Whatever you'd like to talk about. 20 minutes past the hour. Truth and common sense in broadcasting.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that...
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartmann.
You've got a headache. I've got some strange disease. Don't worry about it. This pill will set your mind at ease. It's called Pretinatorivox. It's made by Squab Merle Co. It's a life-enhancing miracle, but there are some things you should know.
It may cause agitation, palpitations, excessive salivation, constipation, malactation, rust-colored urination, hallucinations, bad vibrations.
But buy it anyway. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Shireen in Baltimore, Maryland. On our message board, on today's show, Tom made reference to the interesting discussion in the chat room about mortgages and credit cards. And she says, according to Susie Orman, a substantial part of FICO scores from the three major credit bureaus, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion, are determined by payment history on credit cards. Orman encourages people not to close credit cards like Visa and MasterCard, even if they're all paid off. The reason is because part of the FICO score is based on the ratio of available credit to debt. The higher that ratio, the better your score. In other words, if you have a $10,000 line of credit and you have $1,000 in credit card debt, your score is better than if you have $2,000 with a credit card debt. But if you had a $30,000 line of credit on your credit cards and you had $2,000 with a credit card debt, your score would actually be better than if you had only $1,000 with a credit card debt but only $10,000 with a line of credit. Does that make sense? Okay, marginally. But I don't think it's just that ratio. I mean, they're looking at, they would be also factoring in your income and how quickly you pay things off. But anyhow, she notes credit card scores determine your interest rate for a mortgage and are determined by how you use your credit cards. In today's society, it's impossible to buy a house with cash unless you're super rich. Most of us middle-class people must take out mortgages. Is it possible for a middle-class person who has or wants a home mortgage to survive without credit cards? Because these credit card companies are holding us hostage, there's more abuse to come. That bankruptcy legislation is just the start. Yes, you're absolutely right, Shireen. It is just the start, and there is more to come. And, you know, not at the risk of sounding like Clark Howard, who I have tremendous respect for, my suggestion is pay off your credit card debt as quickly as you can. Don't close out the credit cards. It's worth the $35 a year in the annual fee or whatever they're charging now. It's different ones are different rates, of course. It's worth the annual fee not to have that hit on your line of credit or on your credit report, but pay them off. And then if possible, if you can do this, and frankly, if you can't, then you need to recalibrate your lifestyle. And I realize that sounds glib, but nonetheless, if possible, contact the credit card company and have them automatically debit your checking account for the payment for the credit card. This is just my personal advice. You know, I may be wrong on this, but this is what I'll tell you. It just seems like a reasonable idea, because that way you're never going to pay any fees. You're never going to pay any interest. Your credit card is always going to be paid on time. And don't use credit cards with the idea of credit. Use credit cards as if they were check cards, essentially. But this way, if you have like an affinity card, you can get mileage on a freaking flyer airline or something like that. But step one is to get debt free. There's a marvelous book called No Mortgage. And there are others out there. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them. It's part of this whole simplicity movement about let's downshift our lives a little bit. Let's live a little more simply. Let's reduce our consumption of the planet, our consumption of resources, and downscale, just broadly downscale our lives and downscale our consumption. You know, keep the car a couple extra years and pay it off. Take good care of it. I could tell you stories out of my life having done that. I mean, I've had a car for 20 years. I mean, I've use Mobil 1. You know, it's just incredible. These change the oil and use synthetic oil, and now my son has the car. I mean, it's still running. So it's become a professional tightwad is the bottom line. It's what I'm suggesting. There's actually, it's funny, you talk to folks of my grandparents' generation, people who survived the Great Depression and remember it, Louise's grandmother, who just recently passed away in her 90s, and she saved tinfoil. I mean, just compulsive savers. They got it because they lived through it. These are the habits that we need to be cultivating now. We're going to be forced to, I think. 29 minutes past the hour.
But, Dad...
Tyler, we've been over this 3 times.
democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
We got life by the tush. We're the billionaires for Bush. We're determined to keep it that way.
The billionaires for Bush, yes, indeed. Welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to say, no, I don't think so. Don't believe it to be the case. No siree, Bob. I'd like to hear Tom's thoughts on my seven big ifs, writes Daybreaker from Orcas Island, Washington, on our message board. You can get to the message board by going to TomHartman.com, by the way. I'd like to hear Tom's thoughts on these. Number one, if it is true that the administration had a lot of warning about 9/11 and didn't stop it and even appears to have made stopping it harder to accomplish. Number two, if it is true that on the day before 9/11, Bush was regarded as the accidental president and didn't have the popularity necessary to convince the American people to go to war in Afghanistan or Iraq. Number three, if it's true that members of the administration profited financially from the decision to go to war in Afghanistan and Iraq. Number four, if it is true that they were planning to go to war in Afghanistan and Iraq long before 9/11. Number five, if it is true that the administration has stolen two presidential elections. Number six, if it is true that the administration owes its allegiance not to America, but to extranational corporations that owe no allegiance to anyone save their stockholders. And seven, if it is true that the terrorist threat that we face today is the result of policies and decisions made by the same individuals in the current administration, like Don Rumsfeld, who was in previous administrations, then, as Daybreaker, are we not describing a slow-motion coup? I would say yes. Which brings us to Fred, 42, in Chicago, posting to our message board saying, Tom, sometimes I don't understand your optimism. The cons own the voting machines and the process. They've proven at least several times now that they can turn any election they want. What makes you think that the Democrats will ever get their hands on the wheel again? It's a critical mass thing. I'm afraid we've reached it. Well, Fred, I have to say, in 1974, a year I remember well. In fact, I owned a business in 74. It was the year that Nixon got run out of town on a rail. And the Republicans that year were convinced that they were toast, that they were never coming back. That was it. The Republican Party was in tatters. Richard Nixon had torn them apart. The impeachment, the Watergate thing. And then if you go back to the 1930s, 1936, 37, 38, the Republicans again were convinced they were toast. Well, the Republicans took control of the House and Senate again in 1947, or the election of 46. And the Republicans again took control of the House and Senate back during, or at least the House to begin with, during Clinton's tenure in, what was it, 90? I'd have to go back and look. 94, I want to say. Probably 92. In any case, the point is that we've been here before. The Republicans have been here before. The Democrats have been here before. Democrats have thought all was lost. Look at it, 1928, 1929, 1920, throughout the 20s, in fact. There were a whole series of Supreme Court decisions that struck down minimum wage laws, because the conservatives had packed the Supreme Court during the era of the robber barons in the 1880s, 1890s, 1900s. You had a president, McKinley, who in 1890, what, 6, 7, 8, right around in there, the end of the 19th century, made up a phony war, said the USS Maine had been attacked by the Spanish, off the coast, and used this thing as a rationale to invade Cuba and the Philippines, the Spanish-American War. He just made it up. It was a phony war. And so, I'm telling you, the cycle goes around and around and around. And that's part of where I get my optimism from. It's just knowing this too shall pass, because that's the inevitable course of history. even when things appear really, really dark. This too shall pass. The other thing that gives me optimism is the knowledge that democracy is actually burned into our DNA. This was, for me, one of the most exciting things that I discovered when I was writing What Would Jefferson Do? It was coming across this research that was just done in the last 3 years. In the University of Essex or Sussex in the UK, by Roper and Conrad, these two researchers who looked at animals and say they started out looking at red deer and they said, do animals behave democratically or do they behave hierarchically? Because for hundreds of years, thousands of years, we all assumed that nature was hierarchical. And it turns out that they behave democratically, that they vote. They actually vote. Everything from gnats in a swarm to birds, to schools of fish, to herds of deer, to packs of wolves, to chimpanzees and gorillas. Yes, there are alpha animals, but they mostly simply have first choice of mate, which is what Darwin was talking about. Pass along the strongest genes. Richard Dawkins' book, The Blind Watchmaker. But they don't make decisions for the whole group, by and large. The decisions for the whole group about what do we eat, where do we go, when do we do it, decisions that may have life and death impact. These decisions are made democratically. Thomas Jefferson was right in the Declaration of Independence when he talked about nature's God. Nature and nature's God. A proper respect for nature and nature's God impel us to declare this Declaration of Independence. I'm paraphrasing the last part there, but you get it. And Jefferson was of the opinion, was just clearly of the opinion, that democracy was the natural order of things, the natural state of things. And everybody around him said, oh, come on, give me a break. John Adams writing a letter saying democracies always commit suicide. And you've got this old Scottish economist who's always being quoted by conservatives. It's actually unlikely he actually said what is attributed to him, but nonetheless, where he says, you know, democracies never survive because if you give the majority of the people the vote, then what they'll do is they'll vote the public purse to themselves and they'll take all the money and then there won't be any democracy anymore. Well, actually, it turns out it's the other way around. Aristocracies do that. It's what caused the French Revolution. Louis XIV and Marie Antoinette sucked so much money out of the French economy, partly by their incredibly lavish lifestyle and their tax breaks for the incredibly rich in France, and partly by loaning George Washington the equivalent in today's money of about $6 billion so that we could fight the Revolutionary War, because the French were not fond of the British. Louis bankrupted his own country, and people were having bread riots. People were starving. Was it because of democracy? No, it was because of aristocracy. It was because of conservative economics. So the reality is that democracy is actually one of the most resilient and ancient forms of governance that there is, and that in order to make democracy work, all you need to do is have an informed populace. And that's why the conservatives and the corporate media are working so hard to keep people uninformed, to actively spread disinformation, or to simply not talk about things that they don't want you to know about. You're not going to hear a discussion in the corporate media about the holes in electronic voting machines, even though you've got, you know, like Senator Hillary Clinton introducing legislation to correct this problem. Teresa Hines Carey on Monday saying, hey, you know, 80% of the vote in this country was counted on machines run by two brothers. And it's easy to hack into these things. You would think that the wife of the candidate for president of the United States making a statement like that would be covered by the New York Times. Nope. You would think it would be on the ABC Evening News. Nope. Because as long as the corporations are controlling the voting machines, all is well. See, you got to get it. And so you want to have a strong democracy? You want to have democracy? We need to spread the word. We need to wake people up and inform them. And they will make the right decision. I'm convinced of that. And the need for this, the hunger for this is so obvious. Look at how popular websites like today. We had somebody from Daily Kos called in. We had folks. We had Mark Carlin from BuzzFlash.com and Brandy. I'm forgetting her last name from CommonDreams.org. We've had Mira on in the past. These sites are becoming so because people want to know what's going on. You know, trying to figure out, you know, what's going on in this country. So I'm frankly very optimistic. In Clifton, Vermont, M.J. Walter posts on our message board some quotes from Antonin Scalia. He says, I was astounded to read the following remarks by Associate Justice Antonin Scalia. Now, this is the guy that in all probability will be made Chief Justice when Rehnquist retires. And Scalia, of course, for those of you who have read Dan Brown's book, The Da Vinci Code, Scalia is actually a member of Opus Dei, the very conservative Catholic kind of men's club, group. I don't know how to call it beyond that, which plays a significant role in the novel. Those of you who haven't read the book, I won't spoil it for you. As Scalia is actually a member. So anyhow, here Scalia says the commandments are a symbol that govern. He's talking about the Ten Commandments, are a symbol that government authority comes from God, and that's appropriate. Now, on the coins in the United Kingdom, there are five letters that represent the Latin for something Deus Rex, you know, blah, blah, blah. That basically in English, the Latin, I forget the exact words, but what they represent is the English translation would be, she rules by the grace or the blessing of God. And that, you know, saying that the queen, the royal family rules by God's ordination. But see, here in the United States, we had a different idea. The Declaration of Independence says, and I quote, governments are instituted among men, deriving their, and back then they meant that to be men and women. This is not just male men. This is how, up until about the 1970s, how humans were referred to in this country. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from whom? Does it say deriving their just powers from God? No. Sorry, the Declaration of Independence says governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. But Scalia says the Ten Commandments are a symbol that government authority comes from God, and that's appropriate. This is a little scary. On another occasion, in May of 2002, Scalia wrote an article. It was published in First Things magazine. You can actually find it on their website, where he discusses St. Paul's belief that, to quote Scalia, government, however you want to limit that concept, derives its moral authority from God, end quote. Again, I mean, this is the kind of thing that, well, here, let me quote M.J. Walter. This view of government is appropriate for a grand ayatollah, but not for a chief justice of the United States. He or she goes on to comment, I've shared my concerns with the ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Leahy, as well as Senator Feingold, the only member of that committee who has recently displayed much intestinal or testicular fortitude. What else can I do to ensure that the word gets out about the menace this man seems to pose to our system of government? Keep spreading the word. Write letters to the editor of your newspaper. Write letters to the editor, to the news editor of your local radio stations and television stations, saying what you just said. Point these things out. Print these out. Share them with other people. Raise the conversation around the water cooler at work. Talk to your relatives and friends about it. Does the government in the United States derive its authority from the consent of the governed? Or does it derive its authority from God? And if it derives its authority from God, who's the person who tells us what God wants for us? Is it Jerry Falwell who said that God was the one who decided to strike us on 9/11? Was it Pat Roberts who said that God lifted the curtain and allowed 9/11 to happen? I mean, who's arbiter? Which guy? We need to be discussing this stuff. And if Scalia and raise it with your elected members of Congress, even if they're not on the Judiciary Committee, even if they're not particularly the members of the Senate, because the Senate is who votes on judges, and each one of us has two senators, call both of them and say Scalia's views that religion should play, how would you say it? Scalia's views that he has expressed that the American government derives its power from God are anti-constitutional. We have a godless constitution. The word God does not appear in the Constitution anywhere, nowhere, zero, zip, nada, niet. And, you know, they would be appropriate for the Grand Ayatollah, but not for a Chief Justice. Just it ain't right. This is there's an American Taliban emerging. This is the thing. People are it's just starting to dawn on them. You know, this federal judge who was just shot. Turns out it wasn't this Matthew Hale guy, this white supremacist. It turns out that it was, you know, somebody else, this electrician or whatever. But there is a Taliban in the United States, a Christian Taliban, and they are rising in power. And this is something that all Americans, particularly those of us who are Christians, should be concerned about. 10 minutes before the hour.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got...
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. For your minimum daily adult requirement of sanity, Tom Hartman here with you. Corinna A. in Minnesota posts a question to our message board in regard to the idea of jacking up gas prices. This is a position that I have supported. The fact that the average European uses about 1/7 the oil per person that the average American does has a very large chunk of why that is because gas costs about $5, $5.50, $6 a gallon over in most European countries. And, of course, that extra $3 or $4 a gallon is tax that, you know, is used for appropriate thing, whatever. But the main point of having the tax on there is not to raise revenue, although it's a nice side effect. It's to cause people to be more conservative in their use of gas, and so people drive more fuel-efficient vehicles, and they're more likely to use mass transportation. Well, people say, well, the population centers in Europe are far denser. They're closer together, and you've got big cities, and so mass transit makes more sense. Well, I'll tell you, I lived in Germany in a little town called Stadtsteinach, which had maybe, at the outside, 10,000 people. The next town over, Kulmbach, had 24,000 people, as I recall. That's where our daughter went to high school. That was the nearest high school. And it was 15 miles away, maybe, 20 miles away. I mean, this was out in the hinterlands. We were up near the Czech and East German borders in the boondocks. And yet I could get on the train in Stadtsteinach and go anywhere in Europe. It would take a while. I mean, you know, to get from there to Frankfurt was, you know, 4 or 5 hours. You'd have to change trains in Hof what were the cities? Anyhow, in Würzburg we had to change, and then you had to change in Frankfurt to get to Frankfurt. And there were some marvelous points. It's just bringing it all back. In any case, this is what we need to do here. Back to the question, Corinna A. in Minnesota. She says, in regard to the idea of jacking up gas prices, while that works great on more densely populated areas, here in the hinterlands of North Dakota, northern Minnesota, we're completely dependent upon our cars. There's neither the population nor the infrastructure to make public transportation worthwhile, at least for most areas. What can we do to decrease our dependence on cars, or are we stuck with them, so we better just buy hybrids? Well, this is going to be a big issue over the next decade because we are hitting right now peak oil. We're hitting the Hubbert peak if we haven't hit it already. And it's going to be a huge issue. We need to build more self-sufficiency into our communities. We need to be in the north, that part of the United States, getting wind power in particular and solar power building. We need to dramatically increase the efficiency of our housing and probably reduce the size of some of it. And these are issues that have been faced, by the way, by our nation and others in the past as we ran out of trees back in the 19th century, early 19th century, late 18th century. And strengthen our communities. I have a feeling that what we're going to see in Europe, for example, in the hinterlands of Europe, what you see is that there's basically like little towns, but they're self-sufficient. They are, they grow the food all around them, and people just don't live out in the country much. And I have a feeling that these kinds of trends you're going to see more and more here in the United States, more coming into small towns and communities and less living out in the country, unless you're just farmers. And creating local energy infrastructures, generating energy locally rather than having huge grids. These are the directions we need to move, all of us. Thanks for being with us this week. We'll see you next week.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Vivil Nikraskin. I'm the president and founder of the organization.